Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, in challenging times, the late Bob Ross is a balm for the soul.
We don't make mistakes. We have happy accidents.
We'll spend this hour with writer Michael Mooney, who had relaxed by watching reruns of Ross creating happy little trees for years before he decided to try and paint along. We'll talk about Ross's mesmerizing appeal as a performer, how he developed his style of landscape painting and teaching, and about the stunning success of his company 25 years after his death. Our conversation starts after a short break. Bob Ross. Back in the 80s and 90s, he had this show called The Joy of Painting that aired on a lot of PBS stations. These days, you can find him on YouTube. He's this guy.
Today, we'd make a scene that's very happy, beautiful little scene with a lot of color in it. Very easy that you can do. There we go. Okay, let's just put a happy little mountain, something about like that. And let's paint several little happy trees and push. Look at there.
The weird thing about The Joy of Painting is that, to be honest, I'm not crazy about any of the stuff he creates. Like, I might not hang a Bob Ross landscape in my living room, but if I come across the show, I can't not watch until he's finished. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Michael Mooney is a freelance journalist and author. He watched Ross painting on TV for years without ever actually trying to paint along. Mooney was really tuning in for Ross's soothing voice, his words of encouragement, his worldview, which says there are no mistakes, there are only happy accidents. Don't we all need more of that right now? Michael Mooney's recent article for The Atlantic is called Why is Bob Ross Still So Popular? Michael, welcome back to Think.
Thank you for having me.
I imagine everybody has at least seen a glimpse of Bob Ross somewhere on TV, but for those who maybe never sat down and watched an episode from start to finish, how does a program of The Joy of Painting tend to play out over that half hour?
So it's going to go about the same way every time. He starts, it opens with Bob Ross, kind of a puffy-haired painter, holding a palette in front of a large easel and canvas. And he starts by showing the colors that he's going to use, and then they run across the bottom of the screen. And then he, in just under 30 minutes, paints an entire landscape portrait.
It is incredibly impressive to watch. You almost can't believe that it's possible.
His paintbrush really is like a magic wand. It was amazing to me, especially as a kid. He would just kind of wiggle his hand in front of something, and by the end of the hour, or by the end of the half hour, it was this incredible portrait of trees and mountains and a waterfall and a river and a creek and all sorts of things that, again, it's not high art. It's not incredibly expensive fine art, the kind of thing that is going to be in galleries all over the world. But they were relaxing, nice photos, nice portraits, and hearing him talk about it and hearing him talk about his creative process as he went was really mesmerizing.
Here he is talking to Phil Donahue about his work in 1994.
Say out loud, your work will never hang in a museum. No. Bob!
Well, maybe it will, but probably not this of Smolny.
Because this, why, Bob? What's the deal here? What are you telling us?
Well, I'm trying to teach people a form of art that anybody can do. This is art for anyone who's ever wanted to put a dream on canvas.
I mean, there's something so great about that humility. Bob Ross didn't set out to be the world's greatest artist. And maybe that's why we love him.
That's right. His style of art was really about inspiration. It was really about making the viewer believe that they could create anything. And he went to extensive lengths to try and make it look as simple and accessible as possible.
So what was it that drew you to the show? Like, at what point was it in childhood or in your adult life that you were like, yeah, I'm kind of a Bob Ross fan?
I don't remember the first time I watched it, but I was a kid and I would watch it on PBS. And if I was just flipping through channels and I saw him, I could not change the channel. He was so mesmerizing, so relaxing. And I've never considered myself any kind of visual artist. I'm not particularly talented in any drawing or painting or anything like that. And I had no real desire to paint along with him at any time. I just really, really, really liked watching him. It was a captivating experience watching him kind of very quickly create this elaborate portrait.
It's funny because I think most people watch Bob Ross without any intention of trying to like act on what he's teaching. I guess it's like the enjoyment you get watching a cooking show with some elaborate meal being prepared and you're on the couch like eating box macaroni and cheese out of a saucepan.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are very few things that we experience in society where it's just pleasant to watch somebody else create.
Yeah.
There are very few shows that are just about watching someone's technique and listening to them describe it. But that's exactly what this was.
And he gives these positive affirmations throughout the show that are, like, feel like they're meant for us, even though we're not actually doing it. And I love those, even though like most of what he says is patently false, right? In the real world, we make a lot of mistakes that we don't file away as happy accidents. But for this half hour, in Bob Ross's world, it seems possible that we can literally create whatever universe we wish to inhabit.
Yeah, that's right. It's really empowering. It's really inspirational. And it really is, it's nice to think of a time where your mistakes wouldn't be regrets that will follow you and haunt you the rest of your life. They're just things that you can kind of blend away or paint a tree over. And that's really nice to think about that. It's very calming and relaxing. And it really does kind of stir some level of creativity that was his goal, right? He really wanted to inspire people.
What made you decide you actually wanted to paint something yourself?
Well, I had an editor who decided that it would be a good idea for me to try and experience. I would get to know more about Bob Ross if I tried to experience the technique in person. And so I reached out to a certified Bob Ross instructor, CRI, and there are hundreds of them, thousands, I think, actually across the around the world. And took a class. And it really was an interesting experience. One, it was kind of exhausting standing in front of a painting for a long time with your arm up and kind of very nervously making little X's or little strokes and trying to understand how to apply paint to a canvas in a way that, you know, I really have never done. All the little parts of the technique that he kind of just goes by very quickly on the show. But after a couple of hours, the experience is really rewarding because what feels like just little blotches of color up close on the paint, on the canvas, as you're doing it, you step back and it really is a picture. It really does look like a painting that signals to your brain the tree, the mountain, the creek, an icy pond that signals to your mind all the things that you're trying to evoke.
You know, it's worth noting that there's some real talent in even figuring that out. The idea that you can make these strokes and when someone looks at it, it's going to look like an icy pond or frost on the top of a little cabin. That takes a kind of creative mind that I think we don't necessarily appreciate when we think, oh, that must be so easy. It's just two or three strokes with different colors of paint.
Yeah, I think that was his true art, right? Bob Ross was a great visual artist. As much as critics really did not like him at the time his show was on, and there are quotes out there of art critics just lashing him and talking about how this was not art and what people are creating is not art. His true art was this TV show, was this ability to create it, to kind of enhance a technique. He didn't really create the wet on wet technique, but to show people this way of applying paint to canvas that makes things look like you want them to look, right? That make people think about a scene in nature while they're looking at paint drying on a canvas.
What does it take to become a certified Bob Ross instructor?
So it involves going to Florida for several weeks. I think it's 3 weeks. And it's a pretty extensive training, full-time, every day, not just in the technique, in the wet-on-wet technique, and not just in the ability to teach that technique. So what you would need to guide somebody who's never painted through painting an entire portrait, but also through the kind of positive affirmations that Bob Ross is so famous for. And all the instructors kind of approach the teaching with that same level of positivity, with those same philosophy that there are no mistakes. You only have happy accidents.
There was like a proto Bob Ross on TV before Bob Ross became the guy we associate with this whole genre. What did Ross learn from Bill Alexander?
Bill Alexander was a German painter who had a very similar show to Joy of Painting, and the same technique, the kind of wet on wet technique with a large brush and a large canvas. And he was full of very positive things. You know, if we all come together and think positive thoughts, we can make the world better. Those kinds of things. And Bob Ross originally started as a Bill Alexander certified instructor. So he kind of built a larger, more prolific model of what Bill Alexander was doing.
Is there big money in teaching Bob Ross classes?
There is definitely not. these people absolutely do it out of their passion and love for spreading Bob Ross's message. The instructor that taught the class that I was in was wearing a Bob Ross t-shirt the entire time, and connecting with Bob Ross in any way possible is a very important aspect of their lives. And you know, it can be a side income. It can be some amount of money, but I don't know that anybody's really doing it full time.
Did you have the sense that you might learn something about the essence of Ross himself by trying to paint like him?
That was the goal. I think I was skeptical about that idea going into it, but I think I actually did. I really did kind of understand what he was talking about when he is trying to inspire creation. And it really is just doing it, right? It really is the you can do it element. In my case, as a professional writer, it's sitting down in the chair and typing. It's with the painting, it's beginning to paint. It's, you know, a couple of colorful strokes on a canvas is the beginning of what could end up being a really elaborate, beautiful portrait that you'd want to hang in your house or you'd want to give somebody as a gift. And all of us who work in any kind of creative industry at all, the hardest part is often just figuring out where to start or how to start, or believing that you can do this, that the first couple of steps will lead to something really great in the end.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because for the, you know, most of us can write, but we are not writers. And I think what gets in the way is we get started and then we think, oh, this is terrible. And, you know, like bang our head on the desk and give up. Do you think having spent your career sort of working through that doubt to produce something so you can sell it and make money, did that help you stick with the Bob Ross stuff?
Yeah, Bob Ross is the kind of thing that I listen to often, several times a year, because being a professional writer in America really is about suppressing the ubiquitous self-doubt, the constant awareness that it's quite possible that nobody in the world is interested in reading what you have to say that day, that the string of sentences that you're putting together may not make sense to anybody else, and kind of pursuing the end goal through that and persisting in the hopes that you can rewrite it or edit it or that day you might be able to come up with a turn of phrase that really connects with people down the road. And listening to and watching Bob Ross, and I really refer to it as listening to it, right? Because sometimes, often actually, I'll just listen to it with my eyes closed because I'm really is focusing on his voice and his message. And even the relaxing sound of the brush against the canvas is kind of meditative. And it really does make you feel like, okay, you can do this. You know, those aphorisms get in your mind.
Michael Mooney is my guest. He's a freelance writer, contributor to The Atlantic and other magazines. His article for The Atlantic is called "Why is Bob Ross Still So Popular?"
Gotta have opposites, dark and light, light and dark, continually in painting. If you
you have light on light, you have nothing. If you have dark on dark, you basically have nothing. There we are. You know, it's like in life. You got to have a little sadness once in a while so you know when the good times come. I'm waiting on the good times now.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boy. That is the late Bob Ross on his show, The Joy of Painting. My guest is a freelance journalist named Michael Mooney, who's written a piece for The Atlantic called Why is Bob Ross Still So Popular? If you remember Bob Ross, he's the guy who had that show for years and years, mostly ran on public television. The Joy of Painting can now be viewed on YouTube and is really popular, Michael Mooney, right?
Yeah, I think the YouTube channel has something like 360 million views.
Wow. I've been thinking about this. First of all, I love the idea of just listening to him. It would not have occurred to me, but doing this via radio, I realize you're totally right that the soothing nature of this completely comes through even without the visuals. But in terms of like sort of getting at this self-doubt we all have, it feels like The Joy of Painting has a message that is so different from everything else, which is that we should be striving. We have to be the best in the world or it doesn't matter. Second place doesn't count. Bob Ross is here to say, like, if you're trying and you're enjoying yourself, like, whatever you do will probably be good enough. And like, it's strange that we don't tell ourselves that more often.
Yeah, we live in a world that's really competitive and it's really loud and it's often full of arguments and who can prove that you're right and it's really chaotic and confusing and there's all sorts of reasons to doubt ourselves and it really doesn't occur to most people to just kind of sit there and take in a positive bit of encouragement. Or to tell yourself, you really can do this. Bob Ross was this incredible philosopher that I think at the time, people must have realized the joy and the positive things that he said. But I think, you know, he was years ahead of even like the therapy industry in the kinds of things he was saying to people.
Okay, so the hair alone could throw us off on this one, but Bob Ross actually had a long military career before he took up life as an artist. What did he do in the Air Force?
He was, I think at some point, he was some sort of drill sergeant. He had a quote one time in the Orlando Sentinel, something along the lines of, you know, a lot of my career was spent yelling, and people were yelling a lot, and when I was done with that, I really didn't want to do that anymore. And so his soft-spoken demeanor, which from all reports, he, you know, that was the way he went about life. And his coworkers just knew him as this kind of soft-spoken, relaxed guy that you see on TV. A lot of that demeanor was a kind of reaction to this early life that he had.
What subjects did he like to paint?
He only painted nature. So, you know, there are never humans in any of his paintings. Often if he had a cabin, he really didn't even like signs of humans around. He loved painting mountains. He loved painting trees. He loved painting waterfalls, but almost never people. He even when he painted a cabin and he would have a chimney, he often would not even put smoke in the chimney to show that there'd been no people there for a while.
It kind of makes you want to play armchair psychologist, doesn't it?
It really does. It opens up a lot of questions. And you know, he was on television for more than 200 hours, and he really revealed very little about his personal life. You knew a little bit about him growing up in Florida, in the Orlando area. His parents were divorced when he was really young. He grew up pretty poor. A lot of his entertainment came from nature, from what he would call critters that he found. He had a pet snake at some point he talked about. He liked squirrels. Any wounded animal he could possibly rehabilitate, he would take in. And his show was not rare on his show for him to introduce people to a little squirrel that he found or a bird. And so it really does make you wonder what was going on. I would have loved to interview him. And Phil Donahue tried a couple of times to kind of get at a little bit of his psychology, but you really do wonder what was going on when he really did not like the idea of people in his paintings. His show was really an intimate one-on-one type experience. And yet sometimes he painted in front of crowds of hundreds of people and taught these huge classes and really truly seemed to enjoy being around people and was very kind to a lot of the people he was around.
I wonder, you know, thinking about the challenge of interviewing him, maybe he would have been really open. It's hard to tell because Phil Donahue's style was so brash and maybe not what fit with Bob Ross. But I wonder, do you think Ross would have been pretty guarded in an interview?
It's hard to know. I think you're exactly right about Phil Donahue's very aggressive, brash style. and that's really not my approach. And so I don't know. I certainly would have loved the challenge, seeing how introspective he could be. But there's also some aspect of it that it's really good to not know about Bob Ross sometimes, right? He's given us such this positive approach and these really pleasant philosophies and pleasant things to think about. That if we did know too much about him, that might not be the case. It's hard to know.
Did you try to find, like, I don't know, dirt or more unpleasant things and decide you just didn't want them in this piece?
No. I really did try to read everything that I possibly could about him, try to watch everything, every interview he'd given, every time he'd been on television outside of his show. And tried to kind of trace as much of his history as I possibly could. And I tried to read as much contemporary coverage of him as I could find. And I truly just did not find negative things. Even almost everybody who was interviewed went out of their way, who were coworkers or friends of his, went out of their way to point out that he was this kind, gentle person.
So Ross's initial ambition was just to earn a living teaching painting. He was like this itinerant painting instructor, which I didn't know was a thing. How did that turn into making just his first few shows at this PBS station in Indiana?
Yeah, so he was teaching a Bill Alexander class, and a woman named Annette Kowalski signed up for the class expecting Bill Alexander and was actually really disappointed when she found Bob Ross there, this person who was not the person on television that she'd come to see. But she was very quickly transfixed by him. And so Annette and her husband, Walt, who I think was a former CIA employee, came together and decided that they wanted to go into business with Bob Ross, teaching classes across the country. And so that led them to try and make a commercial. And they wanted to do that at a local public access television channel. And the people at the television studio immediately recognized the potential value of a show like this and encouraged them to shoot an entire season. That went pretty well, but they moved to a different studio, one in Muncie, Indiana. So the idea was to try, the show did not make them any money. The idea was to bring support, get people out, make essentially 30-minute commercials for their painting classes that he was going to do. So the show really grew out of the idea of these live classes that he was teaching all across the country, especially in the Midwest.
I think one reason I love this story is that Ross didn't start out, like if this were the 2020 version, it would be like young Bob Ross always knew that he would be this famous character and make all this money. What was he hoping to get out of doing those things? I mean, he just wanted enough students to keep himself in shoes.
Yeah, I think growing up poor, especially, he never aspired for enormous wealth. And he painted so well and so prolifically that I don't think he imagined his paintings being worth an enormous amount or making an enormous amount of money from any of these things. I think he truly just enjoyed sharing these messages, the messages of inspiration and empowerment that he talks about every single episode. He figures out a way to work those in there. And it's almost constant if you're really listening. I think that really was his motivation. I think that's what he really enjoyed. He really enjoyed painting, and he really enjoyed getting people to realize that they could also, as he would say, put a dream on canvas.
What did it take to make all of those paintings look spontaneous? I mean, he was doing them right before the camera, but it wasn't like they came off the top of his head.
Right. They were recorded live in real time. But every painting, every show, he had a model painting. So he, the time where he would actually come up with what was going to be in the painting would happen well before the show was recorded. He would paint it. Then he would paint, and that painting would be just off camera. So he was looking at it, even when he kind of looked like he was imagining, oh, well, let's put a tree here. And it looked like he was deciding it live. A lot of that stuff had been pre-decided. And then he would actually paint another version of each landscape afterwards so that they could record it, so he could put out a book for almost every season. Annette would take photos of him as he was painting a third version of the painting that he wanted to be a little bit more crisp. And so an enormous amount of planning and an enormous amount of work to look very improvised.
This is not a knock on Bob Ross, but it is kind of a disservice to the amount of like thinking time that goes into art that I think, you know, people in the general public, I'm not always aware of how much preparation goes into a work of art that an artist makes look easy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a lot of art forms where that's the case, right? Where the entire idea is to look like this was a very simple, almost thoughtless process, that this was completely off the top of my head, or, you know, this was completely contrived right in the moment, when there's actually an enormous amount of planning that goes into it. And that's true of writing and all sorts of film and television, and certainly visual art and you know, as you know, radio as well.
Did he sell a lot of paintings?
He did not. You know, early on in his career, especially when he was in Alaska, he sold a lot of paintings. He would just sit somewhere on a roadside or somewhere where people would see him and paint something and then sell it right on the spot. Or he would paint these essentially pie pans. And so there are all of these very, very old Bob Ross paintings that people likely don't even realize are Bob Ross paintings. But his company kept almost all of the paintings he did. He auctioned occasionally. He would give some to local PBS channels to auction off. But the company still maintains the vast majority of the paintings he ever created.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We should be clear, as we said earlier, you know, Bob Ross was aware he was not a fine artist, but you remind us in the piece, he is probably the best known American painter in history. Like, take that, Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, he's probably the best known painter that our country has ever produced. And his show is still airing daily somewhere every single day around the world. When this story came out, I heard from people in Germany with screenshots showing that The Joy of Painting was on their daily television schedule. So it says something probably about our perception of American art versus the reality of the art market and people's actual consumption of art. I'm sure art critics could write essays or books about that exact topic. I think it's just fascinating that this person who truly was not aspiring to fame and was not trying to be known as the greatest artist of all time has somehow become likely the more famous than Norman Rockwell, more famous than Jackson Pollock, more famous than any other artist in American history.
Did you watch like almost every hour of The Joy of Painting in order to write this piece?
I watched an enormous amount. I think over my lifetime, I've likely seen every show. I can't remember the last time I watched a show and had not already seen some of it, at least something in it sounded very familiar. To write the story, I probably watched 30 or 40 hours worth of Bob Ross, which was incredibly relaxing and really delightful. And at some point, you know, early on, I was taking notes about each episode and some of his approach. But after a short period of time, I just kind of sat back and enjoyed it.
It's always fun when he'll do like a special one, right, where the painting is in a circle instead of just taking up the entire rectangle of the canvas. It feels like he was trying to change it up to make it different and interesting for viewers.
That's right, yeah. And even starting at, I think at the end of the first season, there was one painting he did where the background was like a green. And so he did all of these, what I like to consider kind of special episodes, where he, yeah, the background would start black, or it would start with the entire thing would be blacked out except for a circle. He did some episodes that were an hour long, so they're incredibly detailed, you know, really specific level of painting. Sometimes he did slightly larger or slightly smaller canvases. And because people were writing him at the time, hey, I only have this size canvas, or what if I really wanted to paint something that's darker, or a night scene, or, you know, he painted a lot of winter scenes. People asked him periodically for kind of beach or summer type scenes. And so he would really try to help people at home who were writing in or calling. He had a 1-800 number, 1-800-BOB-ROTH, which is still active. And people would call with their very specific painting questions. He really did consider himself a painting instructor and really wanted to help the viewers who were painting along.
So when he was alive, he would answer 1-800-BOB-ROTH?
I don't know if it was him answering. I think the company had people who were there who were certified instructors who were trying to give people tips. I don't think it was actually him probably answering most of the time, but I think a lot of people calling were really hoping it was him.
My guest is freelance writer Michael Mooney. He's a contributor to The Atlantic and a number of other magazines. His current piece for The Atlantic is called Why is Bob Ross Still So Popular? This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with author and journalist Michael Mooney. His article in The Atlantic is called Why is Bob Ross Still So Popular? Bob Ross was the guy who hosted that Joy of Painting show on PBS stations. You can find him now a lot of times on YouTube. Let's go to Bill calling us from Dallas. Hi, Bill.
Hey. Hi, Chris. Thanks. I love your show. Big fan.
Thanks.
I have an observation and a question. And I guess the observation being that my nephew, who's in his early 20s, chose to go as Bob Ross to a Halloween function last season. And I think that just speaks to his ongoing presence, even with young people in our culture. And my question is, how much, you know, what kind of wealth accumulation did Bob have during his lifetime, coming from, you know, the popularity of the show and how he was able to leverage it? And how does that compare to sort of the value of whatever the corporate presence, the Bob Ross empire that exists today, and where those proceeds might go from his what continues on? Does it go towards charity or just his descendants? So those are my questions. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Bill. And I will say, like your nephew, my 19 and 20-year-old sons are really big Bob Ross fans. It surprised me, too. So what do you know, Michael, about what sort of money the Bob Ross organization has pulled in?
The Bob Ross company is still very profitable. You know, it's hard to know exactly how much wealth he had accumulated in his life, but his image is on so many things. So there are a variety of Halloween costumes, of Bob Ross Halloween costumes. There are actually partner costumes where people can dress as his painting or his palette. There are everything from socks to chia pets, where the plant grows where Bob Ross's hair would be, to waffle makers with his image, mugs. You know, I think every week I see a new Bob Ross thing. A lot of people I know that I have a strong affinity for Bob Ross. And so, you know, Christmas last year, my mother-in-law and I actually gave each other accidentally the same Bob Ross calendar. And the company also owns, like I said, hundreds of these paintings that he created. And while they don't sell them, and it's really rare for a Bob Ross painting to be sold, on the rare occasion that they are, they sell for as much as $10,000 and upwards. So the company is worth much more now than it was at the time of the show being on. And Walt and Annette Kowalski are both still alive, and their daughter runs the company. And Bob Ross's son, Steve, was one of the first certified Ross instructors. And I think that he still teaches classes. So it's definitely something that's continued to build momentum even after Bob Ross's death.
Okay, we're about to give people a piece of trivia that I guarantee they will tell someone else at dinner tonight, presuming that they don't spend 24/7 with whoever they live with these days. Tell us about Bob Ross's real hair.
Yeah, the hair. So he's become iconic, largely identified by his hair, his puffy kind of Q-tip top hair is cotton candy type hair is on the logo for the Bob Ross painting products and brushes, but that was a perm and he hated it. So early on when he and the Kowalskis were in business, to save money, he got a perm so he wouldn't have to get haircuts. That's how, what kind of corners, that's how, what kind of pennies they were pinching. And very quickly, as the show became popular, he would complain to people. He would tell them how much he disliked his hair. He thought it was goofy, but it was something that he knew people identified him by. And so, yeah, Bob Ross's hair was a perm. That his actual, there are photos of him from before the show where he had kind of nice, wavy, sometimes long hair.
Let's go next to Arthur calling us from Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Arthur.
Hi there. I just have an observation with no explanation. Last year, my wife and I visited the LBJ Library in Austin, and in the gift shop, in one of the cases, there's, I don't know, 2 or 3 inches high, little busts of all the presidents you can buy, and then there's one of Bob Ross. There's no MLK, there's no Elvis, there's no sports figure, you know, Ben Franklin, but all the presidents are lined up, and then Bob Ross.
Huh.
And I just thought that was really weird.
Well, thank you for your call. Do you know anything about why that might be the case, Michael?
I don't. That sounds hilarious. I suspect that somebody at the LBJ Library is a big Bob Ross fan.
I wonder if Lady Bird, you know, might have been a Bob Ross fan. She was such a fan of nature. That's an interesting theory.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, in terms of Bob Ross merch, which, as you said, is everywhere, I think it's kind of refreshing that we all understand that Bob Ross represents a certain amount of like American kitsch, and yet he also has this great sincerity. And I can't think of another entertainer who strikes that particular balance so perfectly.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers is probably the closest analog in terms of genuine sincerity. And it's interesting when you track his kind of the arc of his popularity. In the early 90s, he started doing MTV commercials because he was kind of ironically appreciated, right? Especially by Generation X. As time has moved on, the appreciation of him is not ironic, right? It's very genuine and it's very sincere. I think it's probably because our world is cynical. Our times are often chaotic. It's hard to know exactly who's genuine. Sometimes it's hard to know exactly what to believe about the world. And Bob Ross's sincerity comes through. His earnest feelings about what he's doing and his passion for this, his true joy, are pretty transparent and pretty contagious when you're watching a show.
Yeah, you sit with Bob Ross for half an hour and you let your guard down.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's really hard to be cynical. It's really hard to be critical or angry about things when Bob Ross is playing.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Brian is calling us from Dallas. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I'm almost 50, and when I was 16, I one summer spent 2 weeks straight just watching this guy I found on PBS, and I was just awestruck. So I went down to the hobby shop, and I spent about $60 on Bob Ross supplies, and I gave it a try, and that first painting is still on my father's wall. Oh, 35 years later, but my style has changed. I haven't done a Bob Ross style painting in, 30, 35 years, but what he showed me is that I could do it, and I did it, and it transformed my life. I can't imagine my life without art. I paint every week, and I think pretty much almost every time when I finish a painting, I think of Bob Ross. I go back and kind of just pay a tribute to him, because without him, my life would be very different, and I think he's probably done that for a lot of people, and it should be recognized.
What a great story, Brian. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything you'd like to add, Michael?
No, that's great. That is a story that's somewhat common. There are so many people who have not just enjoyed Bob Ross for the experience of watching Bob Ross, but at some point in their experience decided to get a canvas and an easel and a palette and paint along. And a lot of people who use art as therapy or as an outlet in the world started because Bob Ross taught them that this was something they could do. I can't imagine writing a magazine story that and simultaneously showing people me writing a magazine story in a way that would make that look accessible, let alone like relaxing and calming. I just can't even imagine the way that would work in any other context. And Bob Ross doing it, it really is. That is high art, right? That is fine art.
It is. We've come to this moment where, you know, so many art forms have been so professionalized, and we all have access to the professional versions of that it can make it really intimidating for people who just want to do something as a hobby, right? We don't want to be a musician if we can't be Beyonce. We don't want to be, whatever. And Ross really speaks to like a different era when everyone who wanted to engage with an art form was welcome to at least try it.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are, it really is hard to do things that we're not good at. We're a pretty instant gratification society, and the work and time that it takes to go into things, even when we know, even with Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours, even when we understand that we won't be a master of something until we put years and years of our lives into something, it's still a challenge. And that's why it's so inspirational to see somebody pick up guitar as an adult and decide, okay, I want to start learning guitar, or even, when somebody starts exercising or somebody starts doing something new, we don't probably take the level of inspiration away from that we should.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. What was the subject of your Bob Ross style painting?
So my painting was an icy pond at sunset in a wooded area with a little path leading up to the pond, and lots of colorful bushes and some frosted trees and a little bit of grass growing around the pond. And as I painted it, I truly did not understand what was happening, what was being created as we went step by step, because it was, very technique centric. So it was, about how to apply the paint to make it look like a tree, about how to apply the paint to make it look like a bush, or how to turn the brush sideways and just go over it one time to make something look like ice. And really, it wasn't until I took a couple of steps back and was able to kind of take it all in all at once that I realized, hey, that's actually kind of a landscape. Like, that's kind of a Bob Ross style picture.
So you were happy with the results?
I was. I definitely took a picture of it and sent it to my mom. My wife took the class at the same time. So ours are very similar, but slightly different. We can tell the difference. I have little birds flying in front of the sunset, and she doesn't. And hers is just slightly better in every single way, basically. we still have both of our paintings in our house. We're trying to figure out exactly what to do with them. There is this kind of delight that you get afterwards when you realize you've created something.
Yeah, there's also, people make fun of the IKEA effect, by which anything that you make yourself takes on a greater value. But I don't think there's anything wrong with being able to point to something in your home and say, I made that.
Yeah, it's a tough paradox we have, because something that's artisanal is really, really coveted. But if you did it at your, if you're not a professional artisan, then that might look really amateur or you know, bad or undervalued in some way, but it really is rewarding to look at something and know I put that together, or, you know, I was able to hang that up, or I was able to make that, I was able to write that, I was able to paint that.
And people are nice to Bob Ross on YouTube?
So the YouTube comments, generally, the comment sections on YouTube are just one of the worst parts of the internet.
Right? Yeah.
People are cruel and vicious and argue about things that you would never think about. And yet the vast majority of comments on Bob Ross's paintings are really positive. And they're not just encouraging of each other, but they kind of understand the philosophy that Bob Ross was getting at. You know, people say things like, Bob Ross didn't paint to show you what a good painter he was. He would paint to show you what a good painter you could be.
Hmm. And Phil Donahue was wrong. There are now 4 Bob Rosses in the Smithsonian.
Yes. The fact that they very specifically mentioned the Smithsonian on the Phil Donahue show is interesting, because last year the Smithsonian announced that there will be several Bob Ross paintings there. And I think his notebook one of his easels. His art will hang in the Smithsonian.
Michael Mooney is a journalist and author. His recent article for The Atlantic is called "Why is Bob Ross Still So Popular?" Michael, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for making time for us again.
Thank you so much for the thoughtful questions.
You can like our page on Facebook. We're on Twitter at KERA Think. You can subscribe to our podcast free wherever you get your podcasts if you search for KERA Think, or you can listen on our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.